Otto.
Hi, Kelvin. We're talking about Mathe Musics, and at this moment, Henk cannot join because he's on a trip. And so, while we are still going into the images which you have created for Mathe Musics from the point of view of Tetrionics to be discussed with Henk, we are already exploring some of the deeper thoughts on that. And just for everybody else listening, we are talking about Mathe Musics, which is an attempt to understand the cell communication in the body cells and the cell divisions, but also in the organic cycle and the physiological cycles as part of the cycles of nature, in terms of a language which has been precisely designed to work with cycles and rhythms, which is the language of music. And with Henk, we have been talking about the ways music has a lot of possibilities to describe changes of rhythm. And with Henk, we looked into the way composers try to connect the language of music to the way we feel in our body. In the terms of Mathe Musics, you would say that composers have actually created a kind of language to address our physiological changes, our elations and our depressions. Because it is well known that when people listen to music, they get a change in their feeling. And I once spoke with a musician performing in a gypsy music band and another one in a jazz band, and both of them said, well, at the end of the evening, they always need to change the rhythm to bring the people back from that high level of excitement and vigorous dancing and internal high circulation to a much calmer setting, so that when they went out, they would be calm and relaxed and basically not bother the neighbors. So it is very clear how music can affect our body. And as Henk is very clear in his trainings, how singing specifically can help heal the body. And so Mathe Musics is trying to create a platform in which all these cell communications which take place in the exchange of molecules, their chemistry, their electromagnetic signatures, and their associated light fields are the only level that we seem to be able to address in a sort of understandable way is the level of the sound waves, sound fields, for the simple reason that two colors of light, they mix and you get a new color, you don't know where they came from. Two electromagnetic fields create an electromagnetic field, you cannot discern them. And at the physical level, things are so separate that you can no longer see how they overlap and interact. So at the sound level, the physiological level, which is also the mind level, that is where I try to get an understanding in this project of Mathe Musics. And then at some point, I asked you if you would like to think along on this. And that led to a very fantastic development, because from the perspective of Tetrionics, you then looked at the way how the energy levels in atomic interchanges could be correlated to the scales and the octaves in music. There was a kind of a little dance to be done, because where on the piano it is evident that there are eight notes in the octave. In fact, if you count the other semi-notes in between, you have 12 of them. But then, of course, if you look at the semi-notes separately, in a way you have the pentatonic system. So how many notes are there to a scale was the question that you asked to Henk. Are that the five of the pentatonic system? Is that the eight of the octave, eight, which people usually refer to? Or do we need to address the 12 notes which you find on the piano keyboard? And Henk basically said, yeah, it's arbitrary. So that is why you then try to see if you could come to a different perspective, because if in Tetrionics the energy levels of the atomic transitions, you charge up and you discharge the atom that at eight levels of energy transitions, then would that be the logical basis for a music notation? And that's one of the things that I hope that we can achieve in Mather Musics to get it connected to the tetrionic understanding of what happens at the atomic and the subatomic level. And my assumption is very simple. If the quantum is the foundation of the creation of the universe, as physics claims, if the quantum is the fundamental unit of change, then every language addressing change must somehow be based on that unit. And that means that music, too, must somehow be related back to that quantum transition. And you've already presented these wonderful images, these pictures of the Mather Musics ideas formulated in terms of tetrionics. And Henk already said that this helped him a lot in bringing together many of the ideas which in music are being addressed, but which are in a way still disconnected. And some of the ideas which we discussed the previous time was how the images, as you presented them for Mather Musics, the notation of music by using the symbolism of tetrionics, I then, in a way, jumped on that and said, well, this is great, because this is what we see in the body. We see how the cells together form the organs, which together form the body, and our sensory system helps to put that in context. So head, heart, hara, and holy bone are actually visibly presented in one of the images that we discussed at that time. And so now you've been working on these images in another way. You've deepened your view on that, and you already said that you would like to discuss those. So with this as a sort of jumping board, starting platform, launching platform, on ramps to the highway, where would you like to take us from here with what you have come to understand about Mather Musics and cell communication in our body with the latest images which you created?
Right, I should possibly, I'll just dig up another illustration that I often use. It's in amongst my memes because it relates back to what you said in your preamble, which is tetrionics. What we're looking to do with music is find a geometric connection, like I did with physics and chemistry. We want to see, we're seeking to find a way to relate, in this case, spectral lines, colors, with music. And instead of having a to have a geometric expression or relationship between musical notes or musical theory, in particular, and physical theory, and as you said in the preamble, one of the key parts to bringing that together is this idea of the Planck quantum, and tetrionics goes into great deal of discussion about the Planck quantum and what it is and its shape, etc. But probably the biggest thing that it shows us is that the quantized angular momentum, or the better still, the angular momentum at the quantum level has two distinct geometric properties, one of which we know, the other one we've misinterpreted. Well, we know both of them, but one's misinterpreted as a vector rotation. And as part of tetrionics work, the building block of mass, energy, matter, 3D matter, and the forces of interaction for all of physics come back to this one building block. And the building block is this equilateral Planck quantum of work. Where we've gone wrong is when Planck discovered the Planck constant through a mathematical trick to explain spectra, to avoid the ultraviolet catastrophe, to unite Wayne's law and Boltzmann's work on spectral lines to bring them all together into one contiguous theory of how energy brings about color, particularly in heat. He developed this thing called a Planck constant, which has units of kilograms square meters per second. Now, everyone's familiar with kilograms as in mass. When they saw the square meters per second, which is angular momentum in classical physics, they immediately said, well, this must be the same thing, because you must also remember that at that stage, classical physics was all they had. This idea of a quantum of energy or of work was something that Planck introduced ad hoc out of mathematics and then said, this works. This explains the spectra of light. This unites two successful theories for either end of the spectral emissions of hot or black bodies and heated bodies. And by uniting them, it also ushered in quantum mechanics. So when they saw this square meters per second, they immediately identified it as angular momentum, which has the symbol in tetrionics of omega. That's the symbol of angular momentum. I've kept that symbol. So wherever you see mass omega in tetrionics, you think mass kilograms square meters per second, which is Planck's constant, H. Where tetrionics departs is that in classical mechanics, the assumption was carried over into quantum mechanics that this square meters per second was a vector rotation about a point. If you think of just drawing a point on a page and then drawing an arrow rotating one direction or the other around that point, that's how angular momentum is classically interpreted, or even interpreted to this day. The big departure from modern theory, the one that a lot of people struggle with tetrionics, apart from the drawings and the illustrations themselves, is this idea that square meters per second is not this vector rotation about a point. It is, in fact, an equilateral geometry. Square meters, an equilateral triangle can have an area of x square meters, and per second is just a circle around that. Now, that jumps back into mystical teachings in Tibetan lore and the philosopher's stones in Hermetic religions, etc. But this illustration of a triangle inside a circle perfectly sums up what the Planck quantum is. So the angular momentum, the quantized angular momentum, is no longer a vector rotation. It's in fact an equilateral geometry. And that's what you see in this illustration that I'll send through to you right now. It's just a meme that I've done up to introduce people to the basics of tetrionics. And it's titled The Planck Quantum of Action. You'll find it on all my websites and in amongst our illustrations. But what you see there is that this omega is within the equilateral geometry, so it is the quantized angular momentum per second, so it's square meters per second, is this triangle within a circle, and energy per second, E divided by C squared, is mass. So Planck's constant, as we know it, is this triangle of electromagnetic energy. Now, as I stated, the triangle itself has a squared geometry. There again, this is where modern physics vernacular fails, or its terminology fails. I prefer to use the word, it has an equilateral geometry, which is more descriptive of what it is, and that these equilateral geometries have equilateral areas, not squared meters, but equilateral meters per second. It just reinforces the fact that we're not talking about squares anymore. And that geometry has a very particular feature about it, and that is that the median bisector, that pink arrow or pink series of diamonds that you see running down the middle of the triangle right through the electric field, is in fact the square root. If you count the total number of triangles that make up, of smaller triangles that make up the larger triangle, you'll find that there's 64 of them, and that the pink ones running down the middle, there are 8 triangles. So the square root of 64 is 8. The square root of energy is linear momentum. Linear momentum is a vector force. It points in a certain direction. In this case, it points in the direction of the E field and bisects the magnetic dipole. But every single quantum of energy, or every single Planck quanta that make up mass, energy, matter, and the forces of motion in our universe, are comprised of these triangles. And every single one of them has a vector linear momentum that acts over a distance, as you can see there. You can measure from the top of the triangle to the base, from between V and C, and you have a fixed distance. F equals ma from Newton's formulations. Force acting over a distance does work, which is mass acceleration by distance. F equals mad equals work. That makes the Planck quantum the quantum of work, the smallest unit of energy that can exert a force over a given distance. It's what brings about all the motion in the universe. That pink arrow, bisector arrow, brings about the action, the action, reaction, action at a distance, instantaneous forces, all these things. All the motion of the universe is driven by these medium bisectors. Within those triangles, you obviously have the electric and magnetic fields, which make up charge, and those charges make matter, make photons and bosons that make up, that give form to matter in our universe. And they also give form to the immaterial stuff, the mass energies, the spiritual side of physics, which is where it sort of ties back into the musical theory, where musical theory is emotive. It's a lower frequency, and it brings up an emotional response if you play it right, of course, which is something I don't do. That aside, tetrionics has used those Planck quanta, and specifically changes between the number of quanta. So in that illustration, we have 64. If you were to get rid of all the Planck quanta bar one, that would equate to a transition between energy level N8 down to N1. Transitions between N1 through to N8 are atomic transitions. They're part of the spectral line emissions or absorption patterns of all atomic elements. They're well known. They're discussed in depth in tetrionics QED. But what I sought to do was to establish a relationship. Just as spectral lines and transitions between energy levels producing spectral lines are a reflection of a changing work, a reflections of a changing work energies. The photoelectric effect, for example, is all about work energy. You have a ground-based energy level. You apply energy to do work, and you excite that electron up to a higher level. If you cease to apply that force, the electron will drop back down, and in the process, release a specific color, which is what Einstein was received the Nobel Prize for, because he explained through quantums of light, which he called photons, specific colors would affect this transition. You can think of it as a key that has to be matched. In this case, for that illustration there, you can only give up a certain number of quanta. And they're always odd number bosons, or odd quantum levels. But there's a specific sequence that has to be adhered to make up these equilateral energy levels. You have to make up squared numbers, so you have to sum odd numbers together to create the squared numbers. They must be in sequence. 1 + 3 gives you 4. 1 + 3 + 5 gives you 9. 1 + 3 + 7 gives you 16. So on. So you're creating a series. So you have to add and reduce and release odd numbers. What I immediately saw was that, as you can see that illustration, that linear momentum, the quantum of work, has a V at the top and a C at the bottom. And this is in line with relativity theory, where under Lorentz's contractions, etc., everything is a velocity is always V over C. We don't bother doing that in classical theory because everything's at a slow velocity. It doesn't make much difference, but it does make a difference as you go faster and faster. As you go faster, you need more energy. More of these little quanta have to be applied via the force to create, to affect, or to do work over a distance, to accelerate an object. So I looked at that, and the thing that struck me was that the only difference between musical theory and spectral theory, or spectral line transitions, was really the quantum that we're using and the velocity. In the case of spectral lines, we're using quantum that move at the speed of light. So instead of V on C, it would be C on C, which cancels out to one as a unity. But in the case of music, we're talking not the speed of light, but the speed of sound over C. So there's a difference. So what I sought to do was to unite musical sound waves, notes, chords, etc., octaves, to spectral line transitions, colors, spectral line series, same sort of analogy. What's really changing is the quantum, or the amount of quanta, particularly, that can apply energy to do work. In the case of photons, they're shorter wavelength, there's more of them, and they, because they're such a high frequency, they don't seem to have a great deal of force. But in our everyday experience, when you look at musical theories, the musical instruments, you apply a force, whether it's plucking the string or blowing into the reed. Either way, it's a force is applied. And again, pressure from our lungs and our mouth are all applying force, whether it's air pressure or whether it's light pressure, is no different. They're all made up of these quantum, these Planck quanta that we've been talking about. The only thing that really changes is the wavelength and the number of these quanta that are involved in each one. So we can then use the same equilateral geometry, i.e. Planck quanta, and all we're really changing is the frequency wavelength relationship, and frequency by wavelength gives you velocity. Now, whether it's the frequency of a photon by the wavelength of the photons gives you the speed of light, or whether it's the frequency of the air pressure, or how many times you're puffing or plucking a string, by the wavelengths of the string or the notes that are produced, those frequency wavelength arrangements will travel at the speed of sound. So it's really, in a nutshell, what we're doing is we're relating the speed of sound to the speed of light through a constant. Mathematically, that's all you do. You just say the speed of sound equals the speed of light when you have a constant to multiply it by. So you can either multiply the speed of light by the constant to give you the speed of sound, or you can multiply the speed of sound by a constant to give you the speed of light. That constant, whatever the number works out, I haven't bothered to do it, but there'll be a number, it's easy to work out. that number is a constant, and that constant is simply an equilateral triangle with a fixed number of Planck quanta inside it. So that picture we have that we started this discussion with, which has a Planck quantum with 64 triangles in them, instead of omega, mass omega, we could simply put K and have C equals KM for Mach's, the speed of sound. And then we have a geometric relationship between musical notes and spectral colors. And that's what I did when we developed the latter parts of this tetrionic, well, actually all of the tetrionic explanations for math and music are all based on spectral line transitions. We tried other equipartition theories and coloring and patterns, and they're fine, but they break down for various reasons. What still holds is relating spectral lines to musical notes, color to music. And if you think about it, it's quite a natural relationship to make. There's many theories out there that seek to put color to music, or to musical notes, and to arrange them in certain ways as to make different patterns that people can interpret with the right side of the brain visually, rather than trying to work it out mathematically or by rote. And that's all tetrionics is doing. But in this case, what tetrionics is doing is creating a direct relationship via this coupling constant between musical notes and spectral colors. The latter half of the work I did, which comes through from illustrations 7 onwards, basically says that if you vary the number of quanta in that constant, or vary the number of quanta in either the spectral lines or the musical note production, you change the notes or the colors. You're creating a change in linear momentum. You're affecting the amount of work you can do over a distance. So changes of linear momentum, delta P over delta T over any period of time, is the definition of acceleration, as in Newton's formulations. Again, bringing in classical mechanics. There's nothing super deep about tetrionic theory. It borrows from classical and relativistic mechanics equally. But what we could then do is we could say, if we don't change the work being done over any period of time, i.e. we have a constant amount of air pressure going through the reeds, or a constant amount of work being done, when you map the curve produced by a constant force acting over a distance, you create a circular motion round and round, just like the orbit of of the moon around the Earth. It forms a circular path because there's a constant force acting on it. It's not wavering to any great degree. Now, that constant force, which is a circular motion, we can also describe the same thing as being a constant tone, a single tone that never varies, just that one tone being held. So we can map that as a circular motion as well. But if we vary that force, i.e. we increase it or decrease it, which is how we produce spectral lines and all the colors in the universe, we can also relate that directly back because of this C kappa V or kappa M for the speed of light to the speed of sound relationship. We can then say that changing force in music produces a spiral. Now, that spiral can either be increasing if the force increases, or it can be decreasing if the force decreases over time. But either way, it produces a spiral. Illustration 808 goes into more depth on changing forces and the spiral patterns they produce. But any mathematical spiral that's out there in the mathematics realm, the numbers that produce that spiral, if you draw them as vector forces, linear momentum, out from a common point, will produce a spiral. And that's what illustration 8 is all about. It says, over a period of time, map the changing linear momentum or the changing work that's being done in a system, and you will map a spiral of one form or another. Now, that spiral can either increase or decrease. Illustration 809 then gives you a page that you can print out that relates scalar energy to changing linear momentum, as in F equals ma, acceleration curves, etc. And it lets you print that page out, cut out the triangles, and then make a 3D model of what was hidden in Newton's calculus. Newton's calculus only draws a line for the changing acceleration. Tetragonics gives us equilateral triangles of energy. Those equilateral triangles are what are the energy source to make the force. So that lets us build a model of these spirals and logarithmic spirals, Archimedes spirals, whatever spirals. All we're changing is the value of linear momentum over time. We measure those values, we plot them from a single radiant point, we produce the spiral. Those spirals can either be mapping spectral lines, they can be mapping acceleration forces, or they can be mapping musical scales and notes within those scales, ascending and descending. If the force does not change, you have a constant circular motion. So the spiral disappears and just becomes a circle. But wherever there's changing dynamics, which is in most cases there always is, you will start to produce a spiral. So that then, because increasing energies produce increase or expanding spirals, and decreasing energies produce decreasing spirals, we can then relate that, as we do in illustration 8, to implosions and explosions of energy, and the forces that those implosions and explosions have and can produce. So there again, illustration 10 shows the same point source, but in one case we have energy decreasing towards it. It will be spiraling in as the energy decreases over time, and it focuses in on a central point. Whereas if we increase the energy, it would be acting like an explosion. And there's correlations for that illustration throughout physics. Whether you're talking the physics of stars, chemical explosives, whether you're talking about cellular dynamics, makes no real difference. Even water dynamics, implosions, explosions related to spirals, related to changing work in a system over time. So they all tie back in. And again, our aim here was to relate spectral lines to musical notes. At this point, I then jump to illustration 11. And what I show there is, in the middle, you have what I call my differential, quantum differentials. It's the illustration I did up for spectral lines that show that delta H nu equals mv, mass velocity. So delta H nu is bosons, so changes in bosons within an equilateral triangle equate to changes of linear momentum, mv, which is of course delta p. Again, as we've just discussed, changes of delta p produce changes of velocity with respect to the speed of light, v on c. We express that as Rydberg's formula, We also express it as Lorentz contractions, velocity changes. But what we see it as, physically see it as, is color in our universe. If it wasn't for this changing energy or work that electrons can do in the atom, we wouldn't have color in our universe. If the electron just went into the atomic nuclei, got bound there, spun around, and then left with all its energy, the universe would have no color. It's the release of these H nu, or the changing delta MV, that creates every single color in the universe. So that's what the center part of that illustration is describing. As I said, the objective of these tetrionic illustrations with the math and musics was to relate spectral colors and the speed of light to notes, musical notes, and the speed of sound. How do we do that? We use the same geometry that we started this discussion with, the equilateral triangle. Because remember, to create a change of linear momentum, an acceleration or a change of work, which is only acceleration over distance, to create that changing physical system, in the case of light, we just add triangular quantum with respect to the speed of light. In musical notes, we add the same quantum again, but it's with respect to the speed of sound. And the difference between the two is this kappa constant I keep talking about. So again, it's just C equals kappa M. Speed of light's related to the speed of sound through the number of quanta within those triangular geometries. So as you can see there, we've got the in blue beside each triangle on the outsides of the illustration. We have the frequency in hertz, as in cycles per second, and the wavelength, as in length in meters, for each musical note. And the musical notes that they relate to are then shown on top of the triangles, which I've color-coded. The triangles, there's 12 of them, and you can see that they have increasing number of quanta. As we go from a C through to a B, we increase the number of triangles, or the amount of work done to reach that note. You have to blow harder to reach a higher note, or you blow less to reach a lower note. Again, this expanding or contracting spirals of work, or spirals produced by work. So we can relate the equilateral geometries I use for spectral lines straight back to musical notes, and that's what I do here. And the color coding of red through to purple matches the spectral line, the spectral colors, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, etc., violet, with the obvious intonation here that just as if you combine or layer all those colors together as spectral colors, you produce white light. If you add all those musical notes together, you produce white noise. The only difference between the two, they're both a cacophony of energy. The only difference is the wavelength frequency relationship, which gives you a velocity, a final velocity. In the case of spectral lines, you're talking about the speed of light. In the case of musical notes, the energy, the number of quanta in that number, in that frequency and wavelength, that produces that frequency wavelength, gives you the speed of sound. So again, all we're talking about is the same geometry, and all we're changing is the scaling constant, the number of quanta that relates, that gives us a relationship between the speed of light and the speed of sound. Nothing else really changes, and you can see that there. All the Rydberg formulas will apply. You can see I've started doing ratios, simple ratios between each note, the scaling ratios. We can then, over time, I'll move on further, and we'll start looking at more detailed ratios like the Pythagorean comma, the syntonic comma, all these other relationships that are currently expressed but not really well illustrated for people to wrap their heads around. The final illustration just reiterates what we've been saying, and that is that all Tetrionics is doing to develop Mathemusics is to create a relationship between spectral colors and musical notes. And the only real difference is this wavelength velocity relationship. You can use the same geometries. All you need is a scaling constant. And that happens in mathematics time in and time out. As I am fond of saying, mathematics is a language, but geometry is the grammar of that language. With this geometry that we have, we know that we need a scaling constant of kappa, and then we can show that in the case of white light, we're just talking shorter wavelengths compared to the longer wavelengths of musical notes. But in fact, we can use the same geometries and the same formulations to develop a full theory of musical understanding, musical notation. And it will relate back to, as you can see there, spectral lines relating right back to the keyboard. We can color code the keys on the piano keyboard to match up with the spectral lines. All too often people apply a color code to various musical theories and even physical theories, and they don't follow the spectral line ordering of the rainbow. It's red, orange, yellow, green, blue, violet. It's that way for a reason. That's the changing wavelengths, the increasing frequency, decreasing wavelength that gives us the velocity we measure. Again, the only difference between the speed of light and the speed of sound is the wavelength of the notes, or the frequency of the number of quanta, how many quanta are applied to the system under measurement at any given instant. So if we do that, we can then have a direct relationship between spectral line colors and musical notes. So that's where we're heading. The next steps will be to take what we've done here, and as I say, expand out further on the ratios between the notes, for example. I'm looking to do some work on that. I've got some tidy up work to do on some of these illustrations. They're getting more to where I want them to be. There's still work to done. I need to perhaps elaborate on one of the earlier illustrations, which is the one of octave doubling and musical scales, where we have this harmonic series increasing, decreasing. I should probably elaborate a bit further on divergent and convergent harmonic series as far as musical notes and spectral colors, so that people can make the direct connection to this changing momenta and spirals. So and then of course I need to develop even more 3D models that we've just started building. We've got a couple already, but I want to develop a couple that we discussed the other day, where you have a polar view and then a side view of these changing forces and the changing colors and all this sort of stuff. So it just takes time, and as is the normal course with Tetrionic work, when you develop these illustrations, you then discuss them, you make changes, you look at them, you sit them down, you think they're finished, you mull over for a few days, and you continue to make minor adjustments and minor refinements over the course of weeks and months, and the illustrations develop. Otto's already gone through this, as has Hank, because every time we talk, I send them a new series of illustrations to begin the discussion, and then sometimes during the discussion I'm busy changing illustrations to reflect things that we've discussed or ideas that we've brought up to refine the illustrations better and better. But we've at least now got a musical theory or a musical geometry is probably even a better way of saying it, a geometric relationship between colour and musical notes, a direct relationship via this kappa geometry or Planck's constant, whether we give it another name, kappa constant, or we find some long-forgotten musical prodigy from the early days, the harpsichord inventor or something like that, and name it after them, it makes no real difference.
Pythagoras.
I've got a bias there. That's another story. I believe he's given us a half-truth.
Yeah.
The Pythagorean right-angle triangle formula is only half an equilateral triangle. So, and he's already got a few things named after him. I'm sure we could find someone that's deserving. But anyway, whether we do or don't makes no real difference. It's just a constant after all, and there's probably is a name for it in the physics literature already. A search will probably show up whether there is a constant already named that relates the speed of light to the speed of sound. And if there isn't, I'd be surprised. But then again, I've been surprised on a number of things during the course of my work. But there we have it in a nutshell. We now have this direct correlation between sound, particularly musical notes, and light, as in particular, colours. So this one-to-one relationship via the constant gives us the ability to map musical orchestrations as spectral colours. So we could have this situation where we develop a program where we play music into that program, and it in fact decodes it back into these triangular geometries with colours, just like that second last illustration, or like the last illustration where you have the keyboard lighting up as per the notes that are played. And instead of a emotive experience within the body of music, we also have this visual experience that relates one-to-one spectral lines with musical notes, so that people like myself who have trouble following what musical theory was all about can then switch off from the left-hand side of the brain, the rigid, here's the musical theory, here's the notation, learn this, and just go in and experience the music, and both physically and visually, audibly and visually, and decide what suits them. You could either play the piano by ear, or you could play and construct musical orchestrations by sight, purely because we now have this relationship with triangles and colours added to the mix of musical theory. So I suppose down the track, one of the things we should probably tackle is looking at the basic musical notation as it's currently done with all the scales and the bars, etc., and changing that into some triangular pattern, and then transcribing a particular piece of music to a visual sequence, so people can then understand exactly what it is that I see in my mind when I describe all the stuff and write it up. But that about describes where we're at. Obviously, we made a few changes to the earlier illustrations, but I think we covered them pretty well in the previous discussions. Anything else you wanted me to touch on, Otto?
Yes, I would. But I would suggest that we round off this part of the recording for the simple reason that it is a beautiful encapsulation of the link between sound and light, and using the kappa constant to actually show that whatever changes there are in music can be shown also as, say, paintings or movies of sequences of color images one after the other.
Yeah.
And I'd like to reflect on this a bit in how that relates to health and disease in the body, for the simple reason that when the note is continuous, when the cycles are connected and closed, as you described it, that will be represented by a circle. then that circle or that whole network of circles in the body is now what we know as health, as has been described by Bert Verveen. But when that health balance changes and the cycles need to adapt to the changing circumstances, then the circles will turn into spirals with the possibility of the implosions and the explosions which you referred to. That is also described by the work of Hans Selye of the system regulation adaptation. So I'd like to go into that for a bit, because that is the deep essence of Mathemusics, and with the beautiful interpretation and translation which you've now given to link sound to light, and basically to turn the understanding of the rhythms of the body up to the level of what happens at the spectral changes of the atoms, we can really get much closer to that understanding of health and disease. But I'd like to do that as a separate recording, so that people can listen to it at different paces, because the questions that I have for you will immediately come out of that understanding that I build up from the work of Bert Verveen and Hans Selye and many others about the way sound and cycles can represent health and disease in the body. So I'd like to do a bit of a translation between health and disease versus sound, cacophony and harmony in the body, so that it can then be connected back to the way that you've now made it possible to actually describe that in a very detailed, coherent manner, which actually relates it back to the fundamental principles which are seen as at the quantum levels. So, is it okay with you that we round off this recording here, and I immediately come back to you for that reflection, because that will probably help a lot for people who want to experience their body better, or people who are working in health, or people working in music, so that they can understand that there's much more going on than we've previously discussed in our society and culture.
Yeah.
Okay, one moment please, and I'll come back to you.